Welcome back to The Fringe. I'm your interdimensional modern heretic. And today's topic is good stress versus bad stress. Like most things in life, you can't appreciate the positives without understanding the negatives. Same with stress. Managing negative stress while utilizing positive stress sounds like a juggling act. Well, it is. Let's start with the dark side of stress and how to cope. This is an article that was medically reviewed by Nayana Amberdecker. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. MD on June 13, 2020. Stress. We all live with it each day, but how do you react to daily stress? For some people, life stressors cause them to become irritable, short-tempered, or unable to concentrate on tasks. Others have interrupted sleep, i.e. trouble falling asleep or waking early in the morning with racing thoughts. Then there are those who react by eating junk food and a lot of it. Remember, desserts is stressed spelled backward. Good news, no matter how busy your schedule, it is possible to manage stress and keep it from ruining your life. Causes of stress. Simply stated, stress describes the many demands and pressures that we all experience to some degree each day. These demands are physical, mental, emotional, or even chemical in nature. The word stress encompasses both the stressful situation known as the stressor and the symptoms you experience under stress, your stress response. The problem with stress is that it activates your sympathetic nervous system, stimulating the release of stress hormones throughout your body. These hormones give you super energy and cause other changes in the body, such as the fight or flight response. The fight or flight response makes your heart beat faster. You might feel very nervous, making it difficult to breathe. Short term, the fight or flight response causes changes that allow you to handle sudden stressful events. When you face fear, or even recall a stressful or frightening event from the past, the resulting hormonal changes supercharge your body to a state of high arousal. This prepares you for action. But long-term stress can be particularly difficult. When stress hormones stay elevated over time, there is a gradual and steady stream of harmful changes to the body. Long-term stress can suppress the immune system, which may lead to the development of diseases. So if you notice, this is a really stressful time for everyone, more so than possibly in years past. A lot of what's happening is unprecedented globally. So you can imagine your body would be more susceptible to getting sick, even if it's not the worldwide bug. Stress can be positive or negative, depending on the situation. Positive stressors, called eustress, may include an upcoming wedding, the holidays, or pregnancy. On the other hand, negative stress, called distress, results in the full-blown stress response. If continuous, negative stress can lead to loss of productivity, health problems, and exhaustion. What are the symptoms of stress? Stress symptoms vary greatly from one person to the next, but the most universal sign of stress is a feeling of being pressured or overwhelmed. Other symptoms include physical complaints, stomach aches, headaches, chest pains, nausea, and diarrhea, and a sensation of numbness or tingling in your hands, arms, and face. Problems getting along with family members, friends, and teachers. Changes in behavior at home, short temper, unexplained anger, crying for no reason, regression, behavior that is not age appropriate. Dysfunctional sleep patterns, including nightmares, too little sleep, difficulty falling asleep, or even oversleeping. communication difficulty, or personality changes, such as becoming withdrawn or requiring much more attention than usual. Impatience. If you are experiencing a few of these symptoms, changes that your level of stress is high. If left untreated, stress can lead to permanent feelings of helplessness and ineffectiveness. Tips for managing stress. Now that you understand more about stress and the symptoms, try following these 6 tips to unwind, de-stress, and get back in control of your emotional state. So you're going to want to identify the sources of your stress, and that can be daunting given that everybody has school, work, and families to think about. But this is an important part of the process. Try to figure out what's causing your stress symptoms. Maybe you're overextended, meaning too many commitments, and feel fatigued and irritable. Once you identify the sources of stress, try to minimize these as much as possible. And I get sometimes that's not necessarily doable, depending on maybe your line of work or where you're at in your life. But try. Well, Yoda says, do, not try. There is no try. However, do what you can. Another option is to talk it out. Talk to a friend, family member, or therapist if your stress level is too high. Getting your feelings out without others judging you is crucial to good mental health. Take time out. Before you reach your breaking point, take time out for solitude. Take time to nurture yourself away from the cares and responsibilities of the world. Find time for inner strength and emotional healing. Set limits. Never hesitate to say no before you take on too many commitments, especially if you are balancing work and family. It's important to prioritize saying no. It's important to prioritize. Saying no can help bring your stress to a manageable level and give you more control over your life. Try exhaling. Breathing can measure and alter your psychological state. Make a stressful moment increase or diminish in intensity. Often people who are anxious or upset take shallow, particularly exhaling during tense moments. You will feel more relaxed. Buy a bottle of inexpensive bubbles in the toy section of most stores and use it to learn how to exhale slowly. Breathing from your abdomen, meaning you're going to allow your belly to extend, so don't think about how you look in that moment. Blow through the bubble blower with a steady stream of breath. If you blow too hard or too softly, you won't get any bubbles. But smooth, steady breaths will produce a nice flow of bubbles. Use this breathing technique without the bubbles when you are feeling stressed. That sounds like one I need to try. I have breathing exercises that I do practice. I don't practice them as often as I should, but sometimes it helps. The point is to do it. I think practicing it when you're not stressed helps to program you into doing it. Exercise daily. I do not do this. I just say exercise when you can. Exercise is thought to increase the secretion of endorphins, naturally produced substance. Exercise is thought to increase the secretion of endorphins, naturally produced substances in the brain that induce feelings of peacefulness. Many studies show that exercise, along with the boosted endorphin levels, really does increase confidence and self-esteem and reduces tension. Exercise also acts as a displacement defense mechanism for those who are stressed out. What does that mean? If you've ever walked for several miles, You know how hard it is to think of your problem when your mind is focused on walking. Stress can affect your health in many ways. The problem with stress is that it's cumulative. In other words, if you don't have a healthy way of responding to stress or counterbalancing the fight or flight response, constant exposure to stress hormones overloads the body. Changes in levels of hormones produced by daily stress can hurt your health. When stress levels increase, it results in an overproduction of stress hormones that weaken the immune system. This can lead to physical and psychological problems. Chronic or long-term stress often results in high anxiety, insomnia, depression, gastrointestinal problems, and can even lead to dependency on drugs and alcohol, a self-medication solution that makes an already bad problem worse. Some studies show that the hormones associated with chronic stress are linked to increased fat in the abdomen, that in turn increases the risk of chronic and serious illness such as diabetes. When should you seek help? When stress interrupts your life, causing sleep problems or making you feel anxious and out of control, talk with your primary healthcare professional. They might recommend a professional therapist who can offer support and give you some practical lifestyle tips in how to manage stress without letting it take over your life. Now we're getting into types of stressors, eustress versus distress. This is from gracepointwellness.org, and this is by Harry Mills, PhD, Natalie Reese, PhD, and Mark Dombeck, PhD. So we have established that stress is not always a bad thing. Stress is simply the body's response to changes that create taxing demands. The previously mentioned Dr. Lazarus, building on Dr. Cellier's work, suggested that there is a difference between eustress, which is a term for positive stress, and distress, which refers to negative stress. In daily life, we often use the term stress to describe negative situations. This leads many to believe that all stress is bad for you, which is not true. Eustress, or positive stress, has the following characteristics. Motivates, focuses energy, in short term, is perceived as within our coping abilities, feels exciting, improves performance. In contrast, distress or negative stress has the following characteristics. Causes anxiety or concern, can be short or long term, is perceived as outside of our coping abilities, feels unpleasant, decreases performance, can lead to mental and physical problems. It is somewhat hard to categorize stressors into objective lists of those that cause eustress and those that cause distress, because different people will have different reactions to particular situations. However, by generalizing, we can compile a list of stressors that are typically experienced as negative or positive to most people most of the time. Examples of negative personal stressors include the death of a spouse, filing for a divorce, losing contact with loved ones, the death of a family member, hospitalization, oneself or a family member or someone close to you, injury or illness, oneself, family member, or somebody close to you, being abused or neglected, separation from a spouse or committed relationship partner, conflict in interpersonal relationships, bankruptcy / money problems, unemployment, sleep problems, children's problems at school, legal problems. Examples of positive personal stressors include receiving a promotion or raise at work, starting a new job, marriage, buying a home, having a child, moving, taking a vacation, holiday season, retiring, taking educational classes or learning a new hobby, work and employment concerns, such as the ones I'm about to mention, are also frequent causes of distress. Excessive job demands, job insecurity, conflicts with teammates and supervisors, inadequate authority necessary to carry out tasks, lack of training necessary to do the job, making presentations in front of colleagues or clients, unproductive and time-consuming meetings, commuting and travel schedules. Stressors are not always limited to situations where some external situation is creating a problem. Internal events such as feelings and thoughts and habitual behaviors can also cause negative stress. Common internally caused sources of distress include fears, example, fears of flying, heights, public speaking, chatting with strangers at a party. Repetitive thought patterns, worrying about future events, example, waiting for medical test results or job restructuring. Unrealistic or perfectionist expectations. Habitual behavior patterns that can lead to stress include overscheduling, failing to be assertive, procrastination and/or failing to plan ahead. Factors determining whether stressors are experienced as negative or positive. Different factors determine whether a particular demand will cause eustress or distress in a given individual. How we think about a stressor, our appraisal and our self-talk, how we think about our own capabilities, our self-concept, and how we think about the specific characteristics of the stressor itself. Example, how intensely it creates demands on us, how long it lasts, etc. We'll all collectively determine whether we will experience stress over handling any given situation. Primary and secondary appraisal. As we discussed previously, Dr. Lazarus and Dr. Folkman described the importance of the cognitive appraisal process in determining whether stress is positive or negative. According to Lazarus and Folkman, there are two aspects to cognitive appraisal: primary appraisal and secondary appraisal. In primary appraisal, we evaluate whether we have anything at stake in an encounter. Example, by asking ourselves, does this matter for me? A stressor that is perceived as important is more likely to cause a stress reaction than a stressor that is viewed as relatively trivial. In secondary appraisal, we evaluate our existing coping resources. Example, how healthy we are, how much energy we have, whether family and friends can help, our ability to rise to the challenge, and how much money or equipment we have, our available options, and the possibilities we have for controlling our situation. If we believe that we lack the coping resources necessary to deal with the situation, we will perceive it as negative stress. Conversely, if we believe that we have the necessary coping resources, the stressor will not overwhelm us and may instead be perceived as eustress. For example, an adolescent girl with limited social and financial support might view being pregnant as a negative stress, while a middle-aged woman with adequate financial and social support might see pregnancy as an exciting, hopeful time. As an exciting and hopeful time. Appraisals influence how you feel. The cognitive model. According to the highly influential and widely accepted cognitive theory of emotions, based on the seminal work of Dr. Albert Ellis and Dr. Aaron Beck, our belief Your beliefs, driven by your appraisal process, strongly influence your subsequent mood state. If you believe that you have the ability and resources to handle the stressors you are faced with, the mood will be generally positive, and vice versa. If you believe that you do not have what it takes to meet the demands you are faced with, your mood will turn negative or sour, possibly causing you to become anxious or depressed. That your thoughts determine your mood is a good thing, because while it is difficult to alter your feelings at any given moment, it is always possible to reevaluate and change your thoughts. If you can find a way to see your situation in a more positive light, you can alter your mood from negative to positive. This insight has been incorporated into a therapeutic technique called cognitive reframing, which we will elaborate upon in greater detail later in this document. As preparation for your later discussion of cognitive reframing, we can talk now about an easy way to visualize the process of how thoughts and beliefs that result from the appraisal process end up causing feelings to change. According to Dr. Ellis, the relationship between thoughts and emotions can be represented by the simple equation A plus B equals C. Anybody getting any throwbacks to high school? In this equation, the letter A stands for an activating event. Activating events are the triggers or stressors that create demands on us and therefore cause us potential stress. As previously mentioned, there are different types of stressors, including life events and daily hassles. The letter B in the equation stands for beliefs. We come into the world with no preconceived beliefs or opinions. From the moment we start interacting with the environment, we start to learn the opinions of our parents, our peers, schools, etc., and also start forming opinions of our own. All of these opinions eventually become internalized into a consistent but often biased worldview, which we use as a measuring stick against which to interpret and appraise ourselves, other people, and the world around us. The degree of bias and rigidity in our belief system is important because, as a general rule, the more biased and rigid our beliefs are, the more often we will find ourselves becoming stressed out. Beliefs which are accurate, flexible, and optimistic in nature help to reduce stress, while beliefs which are rigid, negative, inflexible, and pessimistic tend to exacerbate stress. That reminds me of Stoicism, which I am in the process of practicing. It's not easy when you're programmed to take on a lot and to not address it, but Stoicism is something that I do want to get into at a later date in another episode. The final letter, C, in the A plus B equals C equation stands for consequences. Consequences refer to the feelings that occur as a result of our beliefs and self-talk in response to the activating event. The consequences we experience can include stress, anxiety, depression, anger, irritability, aggression, frustration, etc. Here is a real-life example of the A plus B equals C equation applied to a stressful situation. There are two people stuck in traffic. One driver starts thinking that while the slow traffic is a bummer, it's not the end of the world. She also realizes that there is no point in freaking out, since that won't make the cars move any faster. Instead, she uses the extra time to pull out her cell phone and chat with her sister and then listen to the radio. She calmly waits until the traffic starts moving again and continues on her way. The other driver reacts very differently to the slow traffic. She punches the steering wheel and sits and fumes, thinking that the traffic jam is totally awful and has ruined the whole day. She becomes increasingly agitated as the traffic jam continues. In this example, the same stressor, the traffic jam, produces two entirely different outcomes. The first driver comes away from the situation none the worse for wear, while the second driver experiences significant negative stress. This is particularly upsetting because she cannot react in a physical way, example by fighting or fleeing, to relieve her tension. It can be used to break down an event such as the example above using the A plus B equals C equation. In this example, the traffic jam is the trigger or activating event. Each driver's individual expectations about how the traffic should be flowing are the beliefs, and the emotions and stress reactions that the drivers do or do not experience in response to the interaction between the traffic jam and their beliefs is the consequence. The first driver may initially experience a mild stress or neutral response, and she may end with having a pleasant time chatting with her sister. In other words, she has experienced neutral or positive consequences to her beliefs about the activating event. The second driver, however, has become very stressed, upset, and angry. Her beliefs have triggered a fight-slash-flight response, which will probably continue to cause her to remain angry and upset long after the traffic has resumed moving. The cognitive theory of emotion suggests that our self-talk, our automatic thoughts, and our beliefs is influential in determining whether we experience eustress or distress. We will talk more specifically about how to use this theory, employing the ABC model, to relieve negative stress in a later section where we discuss methods of stress reduction. Self-efficacy and the perception of control in stress reduction. Dr. Albert Bandura, an influential social psychologist, coined the term self-efficacy to describe people's internal beliefs about their ability to have an impact on events that affect their lives. Your self-efficacy is your belief in your own effectiveness as a person, both generally in terms of managing your life and specifically with regard to competently dealing with individual tasks. In the context of stress, self-efficacy describes your beliefs about your ability to handle stressful situations. A large amount of research has demonstrated quite convincingly that possessing high levels of self-efficacy acts to decrease people's potential for experiencing negative stress feelings by increasing their sense of being in control of the situations they encounter. The perception of being in control rather than the reality of being in or out of control is an important buffer of negative stress. When people feel that they are not in control, they start feeling stressed, even if they actually are in control and simply don't know it. Another reason that people feel stressed is when they feel out of control because they do not possess the appropriate coping skills, resources, etc., to adequately cope with the situation. When a given demand, example, passing an exam or winning a race, is perceived as something you can handle because you expect you will do well based on preparation or past experience, example, because you have studied for the exam or trained for the race, you are likely to perceive the demand as a challenge and an exhilarating experience. After the event is over, you may even have a resulting boost in self-esteem because you worked hard to meet the demand and succeeded. If, however, the demand seems beyond your abilities, you will likely experience distress. Across time, feeling unable to respond effectively to stressful situations can further decrease your sense of self-efficacy, making you even more prone to experience distress in the future. Coping skills. A coping skill is a behavior or a technique that helps a person to solve a problem or meet a demand. Coping skills are problem-solving techniques or tools. They make it possible to solve problems or meet demands more easily and efficiently than might otherwise be possible. People who have learned
a variety of different coping skills are able to handle demands and solve problems more easily and efficiently than people who are not as knowledgeable about how to cope. Because they are more easily able to meet demands, people with good coping skills are less likely to experience negative stress reactions than are people with more poorly developed coping skills. In addition, people with well-developed coping skills typically develop a higher sense of self-efficacy than do their peers who have poorer coping skills, and thus are less likely to suffer the negative impact of stress reactions. Coping skills are something that can be learned. If you don't have good coping skills, you can study techniques that will allow you to get better at coping over time. All of the stress reduction techniques that will be discussed can be thought of as coping skills. In essence, they are tools that you can learn and then carry around in your personal toolbox to help you become better at managing your stress. Stressor characteristics. Coping skills, self-efficacy, and appraisal are all characteristics that people bring to a stressful circumstance. They are internal to the person, meaning that they reside in the person who needs to respond to an activating event, rather than being a characteristic of the event itself. In contrast to these internal ways that people may react to stress, there are also characteristics that are inherent to the stressful event itself, which have little or nothing to do with the appraisals or coping skills. These external aspects of stressful events also influence people's ability to meet stressful demands. Intensity has to do with the magnitude or strength of the stressful event. The actual intensity of a stressful event has a lot to do with the context in which the stressful event is taking place. A dead cell phone battery is generally a fairly low intensity stressor when you have alternative ways of communicating and or your actual need to communicate is currently low. When your need to communicate is high, however, and your options for doing so are limited, example, if you have been injured in a car accident on a remote highway and need to call for an ambulance, it's an entirely different story. In this later circumstance, the same stressor quickly gains an intensity and ability to cause negative stress. Duration also has to do with how long a stressful event lasts. A short-term stressor, such as weekend house guest, will tend to cause less stress than a long-term stressor, like needing to become the primary caretaker for an older relative. Number has to do with the total quantity of stressors occurring in your life at once, and we may lose track of that number. A minor stressor might not be much when it occurs in isolation, but it can become a straw that breaks the camel's back when you are already coping with several other stressors at the same time.
Level of expertise has to do with how skilled you are in handling stressful situations. It is easier and less stressful to deal with situations and events when we are familiar with handling them. Practice with a particular kind of stress-provoking situation tends to make that situation easier to deal with. The more you practice a skill, example, such as playing an instrument or rehearsing a presentation, the more automatically you can perform and the less stress you are likely to feel when an event requiring that skill occurs. So, what are some long-term consequences of negative stress? There is the physical impact of stress. The immune system is a complex group of cells and organs that defend the body against disease and infection. A healthy immune system remains in homeostasis, i.e. balance, much like the speeding up and slowing down relationship between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system that we described previously in the section of this document concerned with the fight or flight response. Because of this similarity, the immune system has sometimes been called our liquid nervous system. Stress causes these cells and organs that compose the nervous system to release hormones that trigger the production of white blood cells, which fight infection and other disease-fighting elements. This stress-triggered hormone release is essential for priming the immune system to respond quickly to injuries and acute short-term illnesses. However, this activity is not beneficial to your health if it continues for more than a short while. Chronic stimulation of the immune system causes the system to become suppressed overall and thus become less effective at warding off diseases and infections. Researchers have learned that cells in the immune system release chemicals called cytokines that act as messengers. These messengers allow cells to talk to one another and instruct each other to develop additional cells to fight infection. Hormone release during chronic stress may inhibit the production of cytokines, thus thwarting the body's ability to effectively coordinate and fight against infection. Because of this reduction in cytokines, the immune system's proliferative response, its ability to successfully fight off disease, decreases by 15% or more during chronically stressful situations. This is not surprising then that individuals who are highly stressed are more likely to succumb to colds, infections, and herpes breakouts, a viral infection that causes infected people to develop sores on their mouths or genitals. The breakdown of communication between various aspects of the immune system that occurs during times of chronic stress may also be responsible for triggering flare-ups or new cases of various autoimmune diseases such as Crohn's disease, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, MS, and other similar conditions. An autoimmune disease is one where the immune system gets confused and starts attacking the body's own healthy cells instead of what it should be doing, which is attacking foreign disease-causing bodies. After stressors such as injury or illness have been dealt with, the immune system normally secretes additional hormones that trigger a decrease in the production of white blood cells, enabling the system to rest and rejuvenate itself. This normal decrease and rejuvenation response becomes delayed during times of chronic stress. Let's talk about the effects of stress on the digestive system. Many people experience a stomach ache or diarrhea when they are stressed. The stress hormones that slow the release of stomach acid and the emptying of the stomach in preparation for the flight or fight response also stimulate the colon so as to quickly empty the digestive system. Sometimes this emptying process results in pain or diarrhea. These hormones can also cause excess belching, gas, and enhance a person's vulnerability to develop Crohn's disease, which is an ongoing inflammation of the membrane lining the colon, the large intestine or bowel. Chronic stress hormone-induced physical changes can also increase people's appetite, causing them to gain weight and potentially to become obese. Obesity puts individuals at risk for developing other health problems such as diabetes, heart disease, strokes, and arthritis. Chronic stress may also alternatively cause people to lose their appetite and to lose too much weight. Cardiovascular system. Chronic activation of stress hormones can raise your heart rate, cause chest pain and/or palpitations, sensations that your heart is pounding or racing, and increase your blood pressure and blood lipid fat levels. Sustained high levels of cholesterol and other fatty substances in the blood can lead to atherosclerosis, a disease in which fatty plaques build up on the blood vessel walls, restrict blood flow to the heart, and sometimes lead to a heart attack. Cortisol levels also appear to play a role in the accumulation of abdominal fat, which gives some people an apple shape. People with apple body shapes have a higher risk of heart disease and diabetes than do people with pear body shapes, where weight is more concentrated on the hips. Some very new research suggests that people with apple-shaped bodies are also at increased risk for developing dementia of the Alzheimer's type in later life than are people with pear-shaped bodies. The relationship between stress and heart health can also be a bit more indirect. People who respond to stress with anger or hostility have an increased risk of developing cardiovascular disease. Similarly, unhealthy stress coping strategies such as smoking, drinking, or overeating can also damage the heart and surrounding blood vessels. Musculoskeletal system. Say that 5 times fast. Stress often causes muscles to contract or tighten. Over time, sustained stress can cause aches and pains to occur due to muscle tension. Many people experience muscle spasms in their neck and shoulders, as well as their lower back. Stress can also cause or exacerbate muscle twitches and uncontrolled movements or tics. Headaches due to muscle tension, migraines, headaches due to changes in nerves and blood vessels that can cause severe pain, nausea, and sensitivity to light and sound, and temporomandibular joint dysfunction, or TMJ, which involves pain in the jaw at the joint site where the lower jaw joins the skull, the reproductive system. The hormones accompanying stress can cause reproductive problems for both men and women. Women may experience menstrual disorders such as pain or heavy bleeding or recurrent vaginal infections, and also irregular periods. Men who are stressed may develop erectile dysfunction or problems with premature ejaculation during intercourse. Some other physical problems. Stress worsens many skin conditions such as psoriasis, an autoimmune condition characterized by raised red patches on various parts of the body, which may be covered with a silvery white buildup of dead skin cells. Eczema, characterized by dry, red, extremely itchy patches on the body. Hives, raised, often itchy red welts occurring on the surface of the skin, and acne. Stress can also contribute to hair loss and some forms of balding. A dry mouth and mouth ulcers, asthma attacks, and an increased risk of having strokes due to decreased heart health. Scientists are also exploring the role of stress in creating vulnerability to cancer. This should not surprise anyone. The question of whether there is a link between stress and cancer has puzzled and intrigued researchers and patients for many years. Currently, the available research, based on many studies, suggests no consistent relationship exists between stress and vulnerability to develop cancer. There is also no good evidence to suggest that people who repress, suppress, or deny their emotions are more vulnerable to developing cancer, or that there is a cancer personality type. This is not to say that there is no relationship between stress and cancer, however. Available evidence does suggest that people's stress levels can influence the course or spread of their cancer. For example, one study found that people diagnosed with malignant melanoma, the most serious form of skin cancer, who were in a stress management group developed better coping skills, improved their negative moods, and experienced fewer relapses of melanoma compared to control patients who did not receive this type of stress management training. Even though stress does not appear at this time to be a direct cause of cancer, it does seem to impact the development of cancer indirectly. In a similar manner to how stress and cardiovascular disease are related, people who are stressed often use unhealthy coping methods, such as smoking and drinking excessively, to alleviate their discomfort. These unhealthy behaviors clearly increase people's risk of developing cancer. The mental and emotional impact of stress. Researchers in the field of psychoneuroimmunology, PNI, study the ways in which the immune system and the nervous system communicate with each other and impact people's mental and emotional health. Even though the field is relatively new, many studies have been designed to examine the influence of immune and nervous systems on the psychological consequences of stress. PNI research suggests that chronic stress can lead to or exacerbate mood disorders, such as depression and anxiety, bipolar disorder, cognitive thinking problems, personality changes, and problem behaviors. Stress and depression. Byproducts of stress hormones can act as sedatives, chemical substances which cause us to become calm or fatigued. When such hormone byproducts occur in large amounts, which will happen under conditions of chronic stress, they may contribute to a sustained feeling of low energy or depression. Habitual patterns of thought, which influence appraisal and increase the likelihood that a person will experience stress as negative, such as low efficacy, or a conviction that you are incapable of managing stress, can also increase the likelihood that a person will become depressed. It is normal to experience a range of moods, both high and low, in everyday life. While some down-in-the-dumps feelings are a part of life, sometimes people fall into depressing feelings that persist and start interfering with their ability to complete daily activities, hold a job, and enjoy successful interpersonal relationships. The term major depression is used to describe such periods of extended, unremitted, and profound depression. Symptoms of major depression may include sleep problems, fatigue, appetite changes, feelings of unworthiness, self-hate and guilt, an inability to concentrate or make decisions, agitation, restlessness, and irritability, withdrawal from typical pleasurable activities, and feelings of hopelessness and helplessness. Trigger warning for ending one's own life. Depression is also associated with an increase in suicidal thinking and suicidal actions, and may make a person more vulnerable to developing other mental disorders. Stress and anxiety disorders. Some people who are stressed may show relatively mild outward signs of anxiety, such as fidgeting, biting their fingernails, tapping their feet, etc. In other people, chronic activation of stress hormones can contribute to severe feelings of anxiety, example, racing heartbeat, nausea, sweaty palms, etc. Feelings of helplessness and a sense of impending doom. Thought patterns that lead to stress and depression, as described before, can also leave people vulnerable to intense anxiety feelings. Anxiety or dread feelings that persist for an extended period of time, which cause people to worry excessively about upcoming situations or potential situations, which lead to avoidance and cause people to have difficulty coping with everyday situations, may be symptoms of one or more anxiety disorders. Anxiety disorders, such as generalized anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, or panic disorder, are one of the most commonly diagnosed mental disorders today. Stress and cognitive function. The continuous presence of stress hormones in the body may alter the operation and structure of some aspects of the nervous system. More specifically, stress hormones may decrease the functioning of neurons, brain cells, in a region of the brain known as the hippocampus, a part of the brain that is important for laying down long-term memories, and in the frontal lobes, the part of the brain that is necessary for paying attention, filtering out irrelevant information, and using judgment to solve problems. As a result, people who are chronically stressed may experience confusion, difficulty concentrating, trouble learning new information, and/or problems with decision making. And people may also experience personality changes. So when we talk about personality, we are referring to what is described as the consistent individual patterns of thoughts, emotions, and behavior that characterize each person across time and situations. Each individual's personality is thought to be influenced by both an inherent genetic component, usually called temperament, and by their interactions with the environment. Some people experience personality changes in response to stress hormones, which are part of their internal environment. Some of these changes include irritability, hostility, frustration, anger, aggressive feelings and behavior, decreased interest in appearance, So you may have difficulty getting up in the morning to shower and brush your teeth. Basic things like that become more difficult. Decreased concern with punctuality. That actually happened to me, and it wasn't a good time. I've experienced these so far, and when people don't understand what's going on with you, and especially if they've known you for a while, you'd think they would know that you don't usually do certain things, but they don't think to ask what else could be going on, why your behavior is this way. And maybe they met you at a time in your life when this is just what was happening, but they don't think to ask. So it's really important to ask questions if you're noticing certain behavior patterns in your family or friends. And some people are just inconsiderate. Let's be real. Some people are just inconsiderate. They only care about themselves. And some people are manipulative, all of that. But when you have a loved one or a friend and, you know, you're not accustomed to seeing a certain behavior pattern with them, ask some questions and don't write them off. It hurts a lot when you go through something and nobody cares to ask. Nobody cares to inquire or find out, and you find yourself alone and you want to do better, you know better, and you just don't have the drive to. That's a very tough place to be in. But some of these things come as tests to show who should be in your space or not. So I guess don't take it too personally. It's easy to say in hindsight, of course, but that's life, I suppose. You learn and grow. Obsessive compulsive behavior. Trying to cope with unwanted, repeated thoughts or obsessions. By engaging in compulsive behavior rituals such as counting, checking, washing, etc. Reduced work efficiency or productivity. Lying or making excuses to cover up poor work. Excessive defensiveness or suspiciousness. Problems in communication. Social withdrawal and isolation. Impulsivity. Expressed as impulse buying, gambling, sexual behavior, or similar. In terms of the social impact of stress, the term social support is used to describe how available and intimate are people's relationships with important others, including family, friends, and acquaintances. Supportive friends. In general, social support functions as an important stress buffer. The more social support people have, the less stress will have an opportunity to affect them in a negative way. Social support seems to affect our balance of hormones. Adequate amounts of social support are associated with increases in levels of hormone called oxytocin, which functions to decrease anxiety levels and stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, calming down responses. Oxytocin also stimulates our desire to seek out social contact and increases our sense of attachment to people who are important to us. Stressed people who have adequate levels of social support receive an oxytocin boost, which helps them feel less anxious, more confident in their ability to cope, and more drawn to other people, thus perpetuating the positive cycle of social support. Oxytocin helps balance out other stress hormones such as vasopressin, which is associated with fight or flight behavior, such as enhanced arousal, focused attention, increased aggressive behavior, and a general increase in sympathetic nervous system function. People who are stressed and who withdraw from others rather than seeking support become more exposed to hormones like vasopressin than to oxytocin, with predictable negative effects. They may end up having difficulty negotiating smooth interpersonal relationships with spouses, children, friends, and co-workers, and end up becoming more isolated, frustrated, and stressed than when they started. Many people experiencing negative stress simply do not have the adequate forms of social support available. they may not have the assertiveness skills necessary to feel comfortable asking for help from others. They may feel depressed, although they start to withdraw from others, a normal symptom of depression, further decreasing the amount of social support available. This social support deficit is both a vulnerability factor for further stress problems and also a self-fulfilling prophecy where isolation begets further isolation. Diathesis stress. Why stress makes certain people sick? The popular diathesis stress model is a medical and psychological model that explains the cause of illness as an interaction between pre-existing vulnerabilities, such as genetic problems and old traumas or infections, the stressful causal factors, such as new virus or bacteria infections, new traumas, or other stressful insults to the body. In this widely accepted way of thinking, our genetic and other pre-existing vulnerabilities or predispositions, example, are diatheses, interact with the environment and various stressors to trigger the onset of illness. A diathesis is a weakness or predisposition. By itself, it is not sufficient to cause an illness. Some additional stressors must be added to the diathesis before an illness occurs. All people who have a diathesis for a given illness will be more vulnerable to getting that illness. It will require less stress for them to get the illness than will other people who do not have that diathesis. However, if a person who has a particular diathesis never experiences the necessary additional stress, that person will not get the illness. The model also predicts that people with smaller diathesis for a given problem will require much more stress to occur before they may experience that problem. An intriguing and dramatic example of the stress theory comes from a study of Jewish concentration camp survivors. Those people who went into the camps with genetic vulnerabilities for developing stress-related illnesses, such as having a family history of heart disease, were much more likely to die of heart disease later on in life after experiencing the stress of being held in a concentration camp. The stress theory can also provide an explanation for why different people respond so differently to stressful situations. In most people, the HPA axis is designed to be responsive to threats, allowing the body to mobilize to face a threat and then later to relax when the threat has been resolved. Some people inherit differences in the genes that control the activation of the HPA axis. These small genetic differences create varying levels of stress sensitivity in any given population of people. Some may inherit the tendency to have a weak response to stressors, i.e. an under-responsive HPA axis or decreased sensitivity to stress, while others inherit a hyper-responsive HPA response to even minor threats. The ability of the HPA axis to respond appropriately to stress can also be permanently altered by stressors themselves. Exposure to extreme stress or trauma during any time of life, adulthood, adolescence, early childhood, or even in the womb, can cause the HPA loop to become hyper-responsive and hypersensitive to future stressors. This sensitization process, which is characteristic of post-trauma stress disorder, of post-traumatic stress disorder, results in individuals who are extremely sensitive to perceived threats and who have a difficult time not overreacting to minor threats that other people would not give much notice. Methods in stress reduction. Methods of stress reduction. I apologize if you can hear the rain outside. Hopefully it's relaxing. Stress reduction methods can be thought of as serving two functions. There are restorative techniques for reducing the unpleasant and unhealthy emotional effects of stressful events that have already occurred. And there are preventative techniques that can help you avoid succumbing to stress in the first place, or at least buffer against and reduce the impact of upcoming inevitable stressful events. There isn't any neat or orderly way to divide the various techniques we describe here. While some techniques are primarily useful for restorative function and some of their preventative function, many may serve both functions at the same time. For instance, the diaphragmatic breathing technique could be used to deal with anxiety feelings that have already occurred, or it could be used to prepare for a stressful event. Example, a speech, sporting event, meeting with your boss, etc. Overall, the best, most comprehensive stress reduction plans consist of techniques that offer a mixture of preventative and restorative benefits. Stress relief via breathing strategies. A body's primary natural method of stress response reduction is to engage the parasympathetic nervous system to counteract the tension-producing action of the sympathetic nervous system. There is perhaps no more direct route to parasympathetic nervous system activation than through the breath. Conscious, deep, rhythmic breathing has a calming effect on the body and tends to help the heart rate to slow down, the mind to quiet, and attention to turn inward toward the sensation of inhalation and exhalation. Benson's relaxation response. In his landmark study of the arousal and calming mechanisms of the body, Harvard cardiologist Dr. Herbert Benson discovered that the automatically triggered parasympathetic nervous system response, which he referred to as the relaxation response, that normally ends the stress episode, can be triggered in a conscious and intentional fashion through the use of a variety of stress reduction techniques. Among the various techniques, Benson recommended to engage the relaxation response is this simple breath-oriented technique, which can be practiced most anywhere. Pick a focus word or phrase. Benson suggests the word one or calm, but any word you find restful will work well. Sit quietly in a comfortable position, close your eyes, relax your muscles, breathe slowly and naturally, repeating your focus word or phrase as you exhale. Continue this simple practice for 10 to 20 minutes. Do not worry about how well you are doing. Try to concentrate on your breathing and your focus word. If other thoughts come to mind, gently direct your mind back toward your breathing. Diaphragmatic breathing. Another related example and effective method for releasing body tension is diaphragmatic breathing, which involves breathing deeply from your diaphragm, a muscle located at the base of your abdomen. Adults tend to breathe in a very shallow way, using only the upper part of the chest. This tendency is exacerbated during times of stress. This breathing becomes even more shallow and rapid. Deep, slow, diaphragmatic breathing releases tension from the muscles by improving the flow of oxygenated blood throughout our bodies. You can experience the difference between shallow breathing and deep breathing by trying this exercise. Lie down on a bed or on the floor, bend your knees, and relax your toes. Keep your spine straight. If necessary, put a small pillow under your lower back for support. Place one hand on your abdomen and one on your chest, or use magazines or light books in place of your hands. Inhale slowly and deeply. Pay attention to which hand or book or magazine moves the most. Shallow breathing causes the hand on the chest to move the most. Deep diaphragmatic breathing causes the hand on your abdomen to move the most. Continue breathing deeply for 5 to 10 minutes. concentrate on moving the hand on your abdomen more than the hand on your chest. Once you have mastered the diaphragmatic breathing technique, you can use it at any time and any place you feel the need to release stress. Meditation is also another method. When you hear the word meditation, you may think of saffron-robed monks or bearded yogis bent into contorted positions. If this is your prevailing image, think again. Meditation is nothing more than putting your mind at ease by controlling the focus of your attention. Meditating is a skill that can be learned by anyone, no matter their religion or spiritual point of view. Properly considered, meditation is a form of attention and awareness training that involves far more than a simple emphasis on breathing. Literally, any activity that improves concentration and awareness can be used as a focus of meditation. As such, meditation could be easily classified as a psychological, kinetic, or haptic intervention, just as easily as a breath-related intervention. We've placed it in this breath-related category simply to honor the fact that many forms of meditation often begin with a focus on breathing. Although meditation has been used for centuries in Asia until recently, much of Western civilization viewed meditation as suspect and fringe activity. Contemporary scientific research on the effectiveness of this technique has led to more widespread acceptance by Western individuals. People from all walks of life who are concerned about stress and good health now make meditation an important part of their lives. I suppose you could consider it similar to prayer. Not the same, but similar. It's not a form of worship to any particular entity or anything in that regard. It's, as we said, it's more of just finding a focal point to find yourself, to put yourself in a more present state. Many Western cultures reinforce staying busy. Many of us feel guilty if we are not working, being productive, or running from one event to another. Meditation requires pausing for at least a brief time each day. When meditating, you focus your attention solely on what happens when you are sitting still. For a little while each day, you live in the present rather than the past or the future. Meditation can also help reduce anger and hostility feelings by teaching people to suspend automatic judgments. We often fail to cope well with stress because we form automatic appraisals of situations that cause us to react in unnecessarily emotional ways to those situations. Sometimes we are not aware of making such judgments, but find ourselves simply angry, sad, or fearful without knowing why. We view things that make us feel good as good, and other things as bad because they make us feel bad. In order to develop a non-judgmental attitude, meditation requires learning to notice whatever comes before us without forming judgments. Meditation requires acknowledging judgments and then letting them go. If you do not act on judgments, they will tend to fade. In contrast, if you wrestle with judgments or need things to be a certain way rather than the way they are, those things will remain a troubling center of your attention. A good illustration of this is what happens when we say, "Don't think about an elephant." What's the first thing you do? You think about an elephant. The sooner you direct your awareness elsewhere, the sooner the thoughts of the elephant will fade. You can practice a simple form of meditation by following these breath-related steps. Wear comfortable, loose-fitting clothing and sit in a chair or on the floor in a comfortable position. Cross your legs in a comfortable way. Mentally scan your body for tension. If you notice any tension, imagine it draining away and being replaced by relaxation. Begin to breathe slowly through your nostrils from your abdomen. You may want to imagine a balloon inflating and deflating just beneath your belly button as you breathe. Count silently each time you inhale. On the first inhale, count 1, then exhale slowly. Then on the next inhale, count 2 and so on until you have reached 10. If you become distracted, simply return to counting. After you have finished counting to 10, add a word like 1 or calm or amen as you exhale. Keep the focus on your breathing, attending to each in-breath and each out-breath for their full duration, as if you are riding the waves of your own breathing. Whenever you become aware that your mind has wandered away from your breathing, notice what it was that took you away, and then gently bring your attention back to your belly and the feeling of the breath coming in and out. Become aware of your thoughts and feelings at this moment, but observe them without judging them or yourself. At the same time, be aware of any changes in the way you are seeing things and feeling about yourself. Continue the exercise for about 15 minutes. Sit or lie quietly for a few minutes before you return to other activities. There are many forms of meditation. One of the oldest forms is called Vipassana or mindfulness meditation. Mindfulness meditation involves learning to focus your attention on whatever you are doing at a given moment in the present, i.e. while you are doing it, so as to achieve greater concentration and sensory clarity. When learning mindfulness, it is easiest to choose a simple activity such as eating a piece of fruit. Here is a mindfulness-inspired activity you can try which helps you develop your concentration and sensory clarity powers. Choose a fruit that you particularly enjoy. Many people use an orange. Cut into wedges for this exercise. Others prefer mango or even raisins. Take a few deep breaths and relax your body. Scan your body and release tensions. Let go of the past and the future, and bring your attention to the present moment. Let your attitude be open and receptive. Take a moment to appreciate where the fruit came from. Look carefully at its color and shape. See it as if for the first time. How it is formed. Feel its texture. Notice the aroma. Eat one section of the fruit at a time, very slowly, as if you have never tasted it before. How do you chew? On one side of your mouth, or the other, or both? How many times do you chew before you swallow? Slow down if you start to hurry. Whenever you notice a distraction from the moment-to-moment experience of eating, stop, take a breath, and then continue. Allow feelings of enjoyment to arise as you experience the pleasure of eating mindfully. Repeat the mindful eating exercise during at least one quiet mealtime each day. Mindfulness meditation is a complex subject that we cannot do justice to within the confines of this podcast, really. If you are interested in learning more about mindfulness meditation, a good summary can be found on the writings of meditation teacher Shinzen Young. I certainly do hope that the rainstorms are adding a sense of relaxation to the podcast. Apologies if it's distracting. Kinetic strategies for stress relief involve motion or movement, like running or lifting weights. The idea is that muscular movement works with the fight or flight response and the physical body preparation that builds up to this response rather than against it. By providing a direct outlet and release for the physical stress response, kinetic strategies prevent the buildup of muscular tension. Physical activity is one of the best methods for fighting stress. Exercise helps you feel better by harnessing the body's natural fight or flight response rather than suppressing it. Exercising for 20 minutes or more can enhance mood by releasing chemicals we've previously discussed called endorphins, which relieve pain and increase a sense of well-being and relaxation. Exercise also helps relieve tension caused by muscle contraction. Exercise burns the energy that has been stored in the muscles, allowing them to return to their normal resting state after exercise is complete. When choosing a specific form of exercise or stress management, ask yourself the following questions. Does it take an hour or less a day? Is it possible to do easily and well without a great deal of mental effort? Do I enjoy it? If I persist in the activity, will I improve myself? Can I do it without criticizing myself? You will be more likely to make a particular exercise format a habit if you can answer yes to the above questions in relation to that exercise. The best way to stick with an exercise plan is to make it a natural part of every day, just like eating or brushing your teeth. Many people set a specific time each day to engage in physical activity. If you have to think or plan too much, it becomes easy to skip, avoid, or postpone exercise. Lifestyle exercise is a way to utilize everyday activities as a form of exercise. Parking at the far end of the parking lot at the grocery store, so you have to walk farther, putting your own grocery bags into your car rather than allowing the bagger to load them. And taking the stairs to meetings or appointments rather than the elevator are all examples of lifestyle exercise. Other examples of lifestyle exercise include mowing your lawn with a push mower, raking leaves, walking instead of driving your car, playing catch with your children, turning on your favorite music and dancing, cleaning out the garage or attic, washing your car by hand, gardening, house and yard work, walking the dog. Some people prefer to exercise by participating in sports and/or activities with other people. Joining softball, tennis, soccer, basketball, etc. leagues offer a great combination of exercise and socialization. Regular sessions of running, biking, golfing, kayaking, racquetball, rollerblading, hiking, or taking walks with friends and family, surfing, etc. can also be fun ways to beat stress. I personally like kickboxing. I've only done surfing once, but I would very much like to get back into it. Formal exercise programs tend to incorporate several different types of exercise: aerobic workouts, strength training workouts, and flexibility workouts. Aerobic cardio workouts increase endurance and promote physical and heart health. They involve a warm-up period followed by an active exercise period, which should continue for 20 to 60 minutes of uninterrupted rhythmic large muscle movements at a moderately intense rate, followed by a cool down and stretch period. Strength training workouts involve exercising with progressively higher resistance in order to improve the musculoskeletal system. The workouts increase muscle strength and the maximum amount of force a muscle can exert for a brief period of time, in addition to the obvious benefits of being able to do everyday workout and leisure activities with greater ease. Strength training increases the amount of lean body mass, improving an individual's physical appearance, improves digestion, increases metabolism, reduces risk of injury and degenerative diseases, increases bone density, assists in lowering blood pressure, and produces many other helpful benefits. So if you're a prepper, this is great. So I'm also looking into the benefits of prepping and why it's not necessarily seen as such a crazy fringe thing to do nowadays. Flexibility training workouts increase or maintain a range of motion in the body's many joints: shoulders, back of the legs, hamstrings, hips, back and spine, etc., so as to better perform tasks of daily life, including recreational activities with comfort and safety. Stretching should be performed before strenuous activity to activate body temperature and increase the flow of blood to the muscles, which will boost flexibility and reduce the risk of injury. Stretching should also be performed following aerobic or strength training when the muscles are warm so as to increase range of motion. Flexibility training sessions can also be performed as the sole form of exercise, rather than serving as a warm-up and cool-down and other forms of exercise. In addition to the types of stretches frequently taught in gyms, seen in exercise videos, and illustrated in popular press, there are several low-impact flexibility disciplines such as yoga, tai chi, and pilates that can help you control stress. All have ancient Eastern roots and are based on a shared premise that an intense level of concentration and fluid communication between body and mind result in a more relaxed body and a calmer mind. Now we're getting into why eustress is good stress. Eustress, spelled E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. The prefix eu, coming from the Greek meaning well or good, can be beneficial and is actually necessary for our overall well-being. This type of positive stress that keeps us vital and excited about life. The excitement of a roller coaster ride, a scary movie, or a fun challenge are all examples of eustress. The anticipation of a first date, the first day at a new job, or other exciting firsts also fall under the umbrella of eustress. Eustress is a type of stress that is actually important for us to have in our lives. Without it, we would become bored at best, and in more serious cases, depressed. We would begin to feel a lack of motivation to accomplish goals and a lack of meaning in life without enough stress. Not striving for goals, not overcoming challenges, not having a reason to wake up in the morning would be damaging to us. So eustress is considered good stress. It keeps us healthy and happy. Identifying differences between stressors. Understanding stress can help us more easily manage other types of stress as well. For example, research shows that when an event is perceived as a threat, we respond to it differently than if it's seen as a challenge. Threats tend to elicit a greater stress response from us and create greater levels of anxiety. Challenges, on the other hand, can be exciting and even enjoyable to overcome. Threats are scary, while challenges are opportunities to prove ourselves and learn how much we're capable of accomplishing when we really try. This understanding reminds us that we can view many of the stressors in our lives as challenges rather than threats, merely by changing how we talk to ourselves about challenges and by focusing on the resources we have to handle these challenges rather than focusing on what may go wrong and how damaging that could be. Changing your perspective and maintaining balance. When we work on shifting our focus and approaching stress as a challenge whenever possible, we can manage these challenges more easily and have more vital energy to handle these stressors without a feeling of being overwhelmed or unhappy. Trying to approach various stressors in life as we'd approach eustress enables us to manage that stress more easily. That said, while eustress doesn't generally carry the same type of damage as chronic stress, too much eustress can still tax your system. Just as a schedule can become overloaded and stressful even if the events are all fun activities, you can feel overloaded and stressed by too much eustress if you're not allowing yourself to return to a relaxed state and have a healthy balance of restorative downtime. Hence why its balance is essential. A balance between work activities and fun activities is important, but a balance of eustress and leisure is also an important focus. Being mindful of your limitations. Changing one's perspective can certainly help with stress management, but it's not the only strategy that should be used. If you have too many challenges in your life, even eustress can become chronic stress and lead to burnout or worse. It's important to be mindful of where your limitations are and to work on maintaining balance in your life. This can mean cutting out unnecessary obligations, particularly ones that you don't enjoy, adopting some resilience-promoting habits that can help you to be less reactive to stress overall, and become comfortable with saying no to new activities if they won't truly serve you. This takes practice, but it can make all the difference in your stress levels. And we've come to the end of this podcast episode. Thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate all the listens, all the shares, all the follows so far. And I hope to build a great community where we help each other and listen to each other. And feel free to send feedback on my Instagram page. Feel free to DM me with any stories of your experience with eustress versus distress and anything that's helped you to cope. I would love to hear from you. I'll put a link to my merch store down below and you can check it out. And this was a long one, but the research was super helpful even for me because I have a lot of these issues. I just want to thank you again for listening. I hope this added value. And we'll meet up again on the fringe for the next one. This is your interdimensional modern heretic signing off.